You're listening to A Closer Look on 91.1 FM, Alaska Public Media. I'm Lori Townsend. Today's discussion is all about long-serving program director Beatty Trantina and the early days of KSKA. I sat down with Beatty and Alex Hills, the founding general manager of KSKA, who hired Beatty 39 years ago, to find out more about how the station got started and how Beatty began her tenure here.
Alex, Dr. Hills, please give us a thumbnail sketch of how and why KSKA came to be here in Anchorage.
Well, the short answer would be that Anchorage really wanted public radio. Public radio got started down in the South 48 in the late 60s, in Alaska in the early 70s, but the first public radio stations in Alaska were out in rural Alaska. And that was mostly because where Anchorage had some radio stations, the rural communities, in most cases, had no radio stations. So they kind of took first priority. But by 1977, the people in Anchorage knew about public radio and they really wanted public radio. So the state, through the Alaska Educational Broadcasting Commission, made an announcement that they had funding for a public radio station in Anchorage. It was a kind of a competitive process. And so they accepted proposals from a few different nonprofit organizations. The one of those that was successful, that won the contest, was called Aurora Community Broadcasting. And so this was a small group of dedicated people who really wanted public radio. They got the bid in 1977, and then beginning in 77, they applied to the Federal Communications Commission for a license, and when they got a construction permit, then started to build a studio. The studio was in Grant Hall over at Alaska Pacific University. That's where we all started. So anyway, by the spring of 78, they needed a general manager, and that was when they contacted me. So I came in the spring of 78, oversaw the completion of building the radio station, hired staff, recruited volunteers, and we signed on in August of 1978, August 15th, 1978. And the 40th anniversary is coming up soon.
So the first day on air, Beatty, were you here for the very first day, 8/15/78?
I was not.
All right.
I was not. I didn't arrive until January of 79, so when I got off the plane, and started to volunteer with my friend Corky Merkel, who was one of the original staff. And that was in February of 79. And what we did was create ads for the first membership drive. So I wasn't even in the studio in February. That didn't happen until Easter Sunday of 79, when Corky said, "Hey, do you want to come to the station with me and see what I do?" And I said, "Oh, okay." And I spent the whole 8 hours in the control room with Corky. I remember walking into that control room and I thought, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It just hit a chord with me that has never left. I grew up with radio in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the thought that, wow, I was kind of on the other side of the microphone, just like the people in KSAN in San Francisco, was just magical to me, absolutely magical to me. So I started on the air Easter Sunday of 79. It was a Sunday, obviously, and the New York Philharmonic was on at noon and a bunch of other programs until about 8 o'clock that night. And I don't think I ever left.
Had you been in a radio station before starting to volunteer here?
Never.
So what was so cool about the control room? Describe it for us and what really captured your attention.
I think when I saw the microphone, that's when I realized this is how it happens. People speak through the microphone. I know that sounds very simplistic, but it just seemed like there was a responsibility And there was a dedication, and there was a magic that would come through that microphone that I experienced when I was growing up. And then all of a sudden, I was in the room.
And now you're part of our day.
Well, thanks. The early part, anyway.
Beatty was a wonderful volunteer, you know, and we had well over 100 volunteers supporting us. We had a small staff of about 6 people, and the energy that came from the volunteer corps was just incredible. It really was. And Beatty was one of those early volunteers.
Alex, talk a little bit about what was first broadcast. What was the programming day like for KSKA in those early days? And what were your job duties? I understand that the job duties that you had then as a GM may not be the same as they are now, that you were much more hands-on, even doing tasks that we would not expect a GM to do. Tell us about
that.
Yeah,
and from training out in the bush. It was everything from make the coffee in the morning to change the ribbon on the teletype machine, empty the trash. That was the that was the general manager. Now I guess it's chief executive officer. So he probably doesn't have to empty the trash, I'm guessing.
But you know what, Alex? You set such a wonderful example for everyone at the station, because we all emptied the trash, we all put newscasts together, we all filed records, we all took care of that radio station. And of course, I'm sure we had job descriptions back then, but the overall job description is take care of the station. And it was you that really set the example that we thought, wow, if he's doing the dishes, then I'm going to be doing the dishes too.
So you asked about the programming in those very early years. And Beatty, jump in on this because you probably remember it just as well as I did. But it was what in the business we called it block programming. And that was the way most public radio stations sounded in those days. But by block programming, it means 1 hour you might have classical, and the next hour you might have folk music. Later on, and I hope Beatty will explain why that changed later on, but generally speaking, in the daytime, we had classical music. There was no commercial, there was no other classical music station in Anchorage at that time. So we had classical music, and then we had news. We had All Things Considered from the very first day, and Morning Edition from NPR came later on, but we did our own version of Morning Edition. So the daytime programming was a combination of classical music and news and talk. But then the evening hours and the weekend, that was when things got real interesting, because that was when our volunteer programmers came on, and we had lots of variety. So I looked back at some of the old program guides, and I think folks that have been listening to the station for 40 years might remember some of these. One of the memorable ones was the Broken Down Pickup Show. And that was our friend Craig Mishler, who did what he called bluegrass and old-timey music. And Craig's actually a historian who has studied the evolution of all this stuff. Another one, which was kind of a play on words, a classical music program called EAR, E-A-R, Relevance, EAR Relevance. And that was hosted by Dana Fabe, who later on went on to fame as a Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, but she started out working for us, and I'm sure that she would tell you that. And her partner in that was Grant Callow. And then we also had the polka queen of Anchorage, Marge Ford, and her sister Patty did a polka show, and Marge had her accordion, and it was really something. So that was some of the memorable stuff from the very first week we were on the air.
And then also back in 89, the board of directors had gotten together with local groups and ascertainment, things of that sort, and decided and determined from the community what our reason for being in the community was. And the community said, we like the variety, we like all the things you do, but the primary reason why we listen is for you to provide news and information. And after that, then we became the identity of a primary source of news and information using NPR programming at its core, But the community also said, we don't want a 24/7 news station. We also want other programs that have similar appeal as well. So that opened up programs that were not necessarily just news, but also had an entertainment value as well.
I want to ask about stories from the early days that really stand out to both of you. But first, were there times that you really worried the station wouldn't survive? Maybe during tough times like the crash in the economy in the late 80s, after the pipeline was built and a lot of people suddenly left, or when oil prices tanked. Were there times that you were really concerned about that?
Speaking for myself, I was never worried. We had so much enthusiasm and such a great following. And, you know, one of the things about KSKA compared to some of the other public radio stations in the state is I think that this station depends far less on government funding than some of the other ones do. So when things are difficult in Juneau and people are talking about pulling funding from public radio, I was just a listener by that time, but I really doubt that the station was truly in jeopardy. What would you say, Beattie?
I would agree. I remember the early days, and I would credit Bruce Smith again with the general manager that really wanted to turn the ratio around. Way back in the early days, we were about 80% government funded and about 20% locally funded. And he really wanted to reverse that, figuring that people who are being served, people who are listening to the station should have that financial responsibility as well. So it put a responsibility on us to become more professional, to become more concerned with not just providing programming, but actually providing a service. And so it was during that course of that time that we became more locally funded than government funded, that, yes, there were a number of times kind of paralleling the Alaska economy that we thought we're going to have to cut back. We're going to have to lose programs. We're going to have to lose staff. We are going to cut back in different line items in our budget. We always tried to, though, touch programming last. Obviously, that's why people listened. That's why people sent support. And so we wanted to honor that and keep that as intact as possible.
Beattie, in those early days when you were on air, did you think, I'm going to be here for decades? Or would that have seemed like just a strange idea to consider that you would spend your career here?
You know, somebody asked me once about my career, and I had to stop and think about what they were talking about. Because I just feel like I'm just the luckiest person every day just to be able to come and always find a way to support or to help or to help make the station a little bit stronger. It never occurred to me that 30 or 40 years later I would still be here.
You know, I have to say something about Beattie. I worked for many years in broadcasting and commercial broadcasting in big stations in New York City, and on-air people are pretty well known for having big egos. In fact, one of the big concerns in some cases is how long is so-and-so taking a credit, as in saying one's own name. As far as I know, Beattie never says her own name on the radio. Tell us about that, Beattie.
Well, I used to when I was doing more news, not developing news, but delivering news. And the open of the newscast was something like 46 degrees and sunny skies in Anchorage at 12 noon. This is KSKA News. I'm Beattie Trantina. And that was the open of the news. And now we don't do that anymore. Of course, we've got a real news department that takes care of all of that. But I just stopped referring to myself, and it didn't seem to cause a dent. So I thought, well, there's other things that are more important.
So you're probably the best-known voice in Anchorage where people have no name to associate.
I don't know.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue to this question about, Beatty, you've talked to thousands of Alaskans every day for decades, but most people probably wouldn't recognize you in the grocery store. And as you said,
correct,
you sort of buried your name for many years now. When you introduced author and humorist David Sedaris at the Performing Arts Center, there was quite a reaction, and it was not to Sedaris. Tell us what happened.
Well, David Sedaris is a well-known author and a contributor to Morning Edition and This American Life and so many great programs on KSKA. And I was asked to introduce him. He was part of the Anchorage Concert Association's series. So I walked out and took the podium and said, "Hello, I'm Beatty Trantina." And all of a sudden, everyone started, yeah, you know, clapping and everything. And I looked around. I thought, oh, Sedaris is probably on his way out to the stage. And stepped, and he hadn't started up on the stage yet. So I thought, this is really nice. This is quite lovely. So that was not expected at all.
But we'll always think of you as the voice of KSKA. No doubt about it.
Thank you.
So true. Why do you think KSKA is still so appreciated by the audience? There are a multitude of choices now. It's not like those early days. Why does the station still resonate so?
Ultimately, what people hear and what they depend on and how they develop their sense of trust and their choice can change at any moment, at any time. And I think one of the things that we really have tried to do over the years is not to take what we do for granted and to earn what we do every day. And when we're wrong, we are going to say, oops, you're absolutely right. We're going to correct that right away. And I think that there's a sense of, there's been a number of times that someone has written an email and I have written back and I have said, you know, hello, Mary Jones, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. What you heard was not as good as it should have been. And then Mary Jones will write back and she will say, wow, I just didn't expect to get an answer. And of course, we're going to give people an answer. I'm sure that there have been emails that I have missed or delayed responding. But that really is company-wide. It's not just me. I know, Lori, you and your news team are very responsive to comments and criticism and suggestions and ways to serve. And I think that that is something that we've really tried to develop and really own.
Alex mentioned this earlier about the fact that in broadcasting, certainly there are a number of egos. We've all met a few or know a few. But Beatty, you are just such a quintessential professional that you have this great humility about you, even though you're clearly a rock star in Anchorage and beyond in the state. You've been at this for a long time, but you still, one of the things I admire about you is, one of the many things,
thanks,
is that you take every day so seriously. You're never cavalier about being on air. You take it as if it, every day is the first day almost. You're so serious about it. In fact, when I first met you, I thought, oh my God, she seems kind of stressed. And is she going to be okay? But I realized that that's the level of professionalism you bring to it. How have you kept that professional edge so sharp through all these decades?
Well, I don't have a magic formula other than I really think that what we do is almost sacred. And I think that it can get lost so easily, so fast, with taking things for granted. And I learn from the people around me the care and the professionalism and the work and the detail that they put into everything from engineering to news to development to crafting a program. And I just want to make sure that I rise to their level. And so I think that it is understanding that it's never one person. It's always a lot of people. We feed into each other, and then what comes out is something, again, that it is that sense of trust that the audience has for what we do, that they rely on us to deliver a service that is not available most every place else. And especially nowadays when there's so many things that are being said and claimed and done. And I think that being able to come back to the local public radio station, and I bet every public radio station, every community is probably feeling the same thing, that they have such an affinity and a connection for this is not just a service that's coming from someplace else. It's coming from right here. And when people can trust that, then it's something that we need to honor.
It doesn't matter what's going on in the studio. It doesn't matter if the janitor's coming in the door or whatever. What's going out over the air takes precedence over everything else.
That's absolutely correct. And funny you should mention the janitor coming in through the door, because this happened. We were in Grant Hall, and it was during Morning Edition. And across from the board, the control board, there was a door that opened up out to the lobby of the registrar's office of APU. And that door was always locked, except this morning. So I'm on the air, and I had a stack of 8-track carts with all the news information. And over my glasses, I saw the door handle begin to twist a little bit, and I thought, oh, well, that door is always locked, so nobody's going to come in. Except that morning, so the door opened, swung open, and it was the APU custodian. And I thought, oh, certainly he will see me with my headphones on and the on-air light and everything. He'll close the door and say, oh, I'll come back another time. No, he had a job to do. And so he walked in with his 8-foot ladder, with his tool belt.
Whistling, I suppose.
He was not whistling. He was very quiet. But he also had probably 6 or 7 long fluorescent tubes that he was there to change the light bulbs in the ceiling of the control room. I kept going because I was on the air, and I thought, well, he will, again, you know, depart. He set up his ladder. He got his tool belt all together. He marched up the ladder and undid the lights. The dust was kind of flowing down. And he changed 4 light bulbs during the time that I was on the air with a newscast. And after he was done, he gathered things up and he left. And we never said anything to each other, but he had a job to do and I had a job to do. And I thought, this is radio. This is how it works.
We're live on the air.
We are live on the air, but we had light.
I've always admired that you are so dedicated to service to our audience, Speedy, that I think one of the great illustrations of that is that you drive around with a clipboard after storms to note where traffic lights may be out or where there might be debris in the road, so that when you get to the station, you can let people know what they need to know so they'll have a safe commute. When did you first start that?
I think I first started that working with you. I believe so, because I saw the attention to detail that you and your news team always provided. And I'm the first one here in the morning. And so if there is some kind of weather or something that is going to impact people's commute, we don't have a traffic team. We don't have news people who are coming in at that particular hour of the morning. And I thought, well, I can identify those things that I saw so I can advise people, you know, on the corner of Northern Lights and whatever, there's a tree down or there's power outages in this particular area. And I thought, as long as you're okay with that as a news director, then I can contribute as well. And I did that just the other day when we had winds out on the west. And I thought, okay, I better do my big circle. And I don't go very far or do a comprehensive look at Anchorage, but I try to provide information that people are going to need getting up in the morning, getting the kids off, their commute, if they're on foot, if they're riding their bicycle, just those things that might make their morning a little easier.
And Alex, did you recognize the shining light that Beattie is when you hired her?
Of course, of course. In retrospect, of course.
I had a lot of help. Still have a lot of help.
Beattie, I can't imagine that you'll miss getting up at 3 in the morning or 2:30 whenever you get up every day, but what will you miss most about being here every day?
Oh, the people. Absolutely the people. And I must say that it's awfully nice, too, being here at 5 o'clock in the morning and seeing that board all lit up and seeing that microphone kind of, you know, full circle of realizing here's a new day. New information, a new way to say, hello, we're here. We're here, and I know that you're there listening as well. That little intimacy, I think, is something that I will certainly miss. And it's all the people in the community. I'm not going anywhere, so I'm still going to be seeing people. But this is a rich environment to learn and to get excited about new projects and to see people get excited about new things. And that's something that I hope to find other paths and other orbs, if you will, to get that excitement. And but it's the people that I will miss the most, I'm sure.
What do you want your faithful listeners who will miss you greatly, me included, to know as you prepare to take your leave and head off on your next big adventure?
I want to assure listeners that Shelley Wozniak is our new program director. She is bright. She is talented. She has a history with public radio and Alaska Public Radio. We have a great team of FM people with Connie Huff and Eric Bork and Dave Waldron. Our great news team and development. I want to assure people that there will be some great things coming up in the years ahead, but also the same kind of trusted service that people are used to hearing will continue.
Well, it's really been an honor for me to have both of you luminaries in the studio and to be able to conduct this interview. Any closing thoughts, Alex?
Yippee, it's Friday.
It is.
Well, Beattie, thank you so much on behalf of everyone who's heard your voice and for those who know and don't know what kind of a dedicated, beautiful human being you are and how you bring just so much joy to work every day, because I've never seen you grumpy or speaking cross about anyone or anything. I've learned a lot from you in that regard, so thank you so much.
Thanks, Beattie. You're the greatest.
Thank you both very much.
That was KSKA's founding general manager Alex Hills and longtime program director Beattie Trantina reflecting on the station's early days and Beattie's amazing 39-year service to the station and the Anchorage community. Thanks, Beattie. And thank you for listening to A Closer Look on Alaska Public Media. You can listen again at our website, alaskapublic.org. I'm Lori Townsend.